again.
Hi, you're listening to the Georgia Politics Podcast. This is Joseph Geierman. We are coming to you live for us, recorded for you from Manuel's Tavern in Atlanta. And with us today are our panelists, starting to my left.
Jen Brock.
Hey, I'm Larry, otherwise known as Decatur Guy.
Catherine Smith.
We're actually coming to you shortly after a pretty big primary and runoff. And there were some interesting upsets that came out of that. One of which was in the Georgia Democratic Senate race for the spot to run for Senate. Vernon Jones, who I think a year ago we talked about and thought that he probably had it locked up. Or maybe at least he had anyone coming up against him had a hard row to hoe, but he actually was defeated by Jim Martin and in the runoff. And Catherine, why do you think at the very end, what do you think happened to make that happen?
I think there were two things that happened. First of all, I think that the other candidates aside from Josh Lanier all came out in support of Jim Martin, and I think their supporters moved over and helped put Jim over the top, as well as at the very last minute, Dr. Reverend Joseph Lowery, who's a very important and very influential African-American minister and civil rights leader in Atlanta, came out quite forcefully in support of Jim Martin and was quite critical of Vernon Jones, though I don't think he ever actually used his name in his press release. It was obvious that he was referring to him. So I think those two things together with there was some other stuff that happened with Vernon's flyers that he claimed to have Obama support, and Obama, you know, said that wasn't true.
Well, so he was sending out the flyers saying it was a 3-for-1, like with him, Obama, and I forget who
likes those three ways, Vernon.
And Obama came out and said he didn't support the guy, and I think the only reason he didn't even want to shake the guy's hand when they met. So I'm surprised that didn't get more play actually in the media than it did. But
I think Vernon overplayed his hand a little bit. He was, I mean, let's just say it. I mean, the African American vote does not traditionally turn out in a runoff, and I think that really hurt him. But if you look down at the precinct by precinct level in DeKalb County, that's the most surprising part, is Martin beat Vernon Jones in South DeKalb in precinct by precinct by precinct.
And there was pretty good turnout because of the
they say
CEO
it wasn't
race,
that different from
from the July 15th primary. No.
Yeah, I mean, when I said the first, I think downstate, Vernon Jones was very strong in Savannah and Macon and Albany and all those cities that have pretty large African-American turnout, and I'd like to see what the turnout was in those precincts. But I think in DeKalb County, like you say, it was very strong and it was very anti-Vernon. And quite frankly, I think Burl Ellis probably would have beaten Vernon Jones if it were a one-on-one for CEO this time. I think Vernon is that damaged goods, even in DeKalb County, and I don't know how he could have won without it.
I actually think I see it the opposite. I don't see Jim Martin upsetting Vernon Jones as much as I see if Vernon Jones had won, I think it had been an upset. I mean, granted, Vernon Jones was the number one vote getter in the primary, in the original primary, but I think that the anti-Vernon Jones vote was just split between the other 4 or 5 candidates. I think that if it had just been Vernon Jones and another guy in the primary, I think the other guy would have completely demolished Vernon Jones, and I think that his sort of win, or he's going to win because he got the most votes in the primary, I think was overblown. I think that if Vernon had won, I think it would have been the upset.
I think you're right. I think Vernon's whole chance of winning was in the general primary. If he was somehow able to sneak 50+1 votes in the general, that was his real strategy. He knew going into a primary, if a candidate could focus against him, that he'd be dead.
Well, that's what they usually say, right? That the if you get the most votes in a runoff, but you aren't you actually get stuck in a runoff, you're in trouble. So that's what it looks like happened.
And I think the Bush, at the moment it was Jim Martin versus Vernon Jones. I said that night, Jim Martin's got to get tough, and he's got to repeat over and over and over and over and over again. This man, Vernon Jones, admits that he voted for George Bush twice. What kind of judgment is that? And I think that ultimately killed him.
And I think when he was on the televised debate, when Vernon refused to say whether he would endorse whoever wins and if Jim were to win, I think that hurt him too. And I mean, Democrats like to vote for Democrats who are going to support Democrats. You know, I mean,
you're
looking for votes from Democrats in a runoff, not
hardcore Democrats.
Yeah. So I think that I mean, that made me mad. But
he
of course,
still
I was
hasn't endorsed
mad,
him, though, has he?
No, he has not.
Yeah, so no surprises.
Did Jim Martin even make a big thing about him voting twice?
I got a flyer in the mail that was essentially that. It was like, fool me once, fool me twice, whatever.
Right. Yeah, and he talked about it on the in the debate on PBS. He talked about it in the debate on Kudzuvine. And he talked about it in like press releases. Yeah, he made kind of a big deal about that.
I had forgotten about the mailer.
Well, I mean, Vernon Jones was asked about it several times, and since he was on the record, he couldn't really
go
back.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It didn't really make sense to me, like, saying that he wanted change, but he voted for the guy
exactly.
who would try and change for
exactly.
twice, so.
I think the voters saw it.
Well, you know, there was one race that didn't actually make it to the primary, and that was the District 80 race with Keith Gross is the only person running. There was a lot of drama about him on the blogosphere, and some challenges raised as to the validity of whether he could even run a race in Georgia, because people didn't think that he was actually a resident of the state for 2 years, let alone his own district. So. Larry.
Joseph, I remember probably back in February, you emailed me and said, what do you know about this guy? And I think my response was, he was a fraud, or something to that effect.
You didn't put it quite that strongly.
but I knew there was just something about the guy that wasn't right. And the fact that he was able to come into that primary, 24 years old, no political experience, by his own admission, hadn't lived in Georgia more than 2 years, how he was able to come into that primary and push everybody out who might have wanted to run because he might be able to self-fund, it's beyond me. I think it just shows the weakness of the party machinery there. They should have picked this up. The leadership of the party shouldn't have, 2 weeks before this whole story broke, held a fundraiser for him without doing a little bit of research into the guy, which would have been a good Google search. You would have been able to tell that this guy wasn't all he said he was, and I'm not just talking about his residency, but all these businesses that he claims to have owned, and it looks
turned
like
around.
He turned around. It looks like everything he owned went to bit the dust.
Well, the thing that I thought, the thing that ultimately what I think this shows is that. Some of the political consultants and mail houses and consulting agencies in Georgia, specifically mostly in Metro, are kind of gangsta. I mean, they are. They bragged about how they had cleared out the race so that he was the only one running, and I think that as The leadership of the party should have more influence so that that can happen. And the way you do that is by building the party. But we don't look, well, maybe we think about it that way, but we don't really act on it that way, in my opinion.
They also didn't cash those checks till the fundraising until after he was disqualified, which was the kind of bullshit thing to do.
They held on to the checks until?
Mm-hmm. Until after he was disqualified, and then they cashed them all.
Who?
Keith Gross.
Okay.
So what can he do with them, though? I mean, he has to use them.
I mean, I don't know. Their address is on them. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting back. You say that, because he held that fundraiser right here.
I was here.
I clearly didn't go. I looked at the disclosures, and I only found like two checks that could be traced back to that fundraiser, none of which were from any of the supposed party leaders who threw the party. So, and that was as of, what, July 30th?
I think a lot of the checks were under whatever the disclosure amount was.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who write a check for $99, so it won't be.
Mm-hmm. good choice.
Yeah, I mean, there are, I've seen it, you know, especially elected officials, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, I know what I was going to say is that what I found interesting this week with the disclosure from John Edwards about some of his recent behavior. today or yesterday in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, there was a thing about Stephanie Benefield requesting her money back from John Edwards, which I think is perfectly legitimate. I have no beef with her about that. But what I do find interesting is I don't remember hearing that from, because I was here that night, and Stephanie and Rob Talay and Nan Orok and Stacey Abrams. Was Stacey Abrams here?
I think so.
And, I mean, there were, it was the, you know,
in-town Atlanta.
Progressive liberal Democrats. And I don't remember hearing them, anything from them requesting their money back from Keith Gross. Now, maybe they did it and they just didn't talk about it in the AJC, but...
Well, I can't find any record that they gave, so, you know, it, maybe they did, but... nice French fry.
Sorry, we're
no, thanks. Smells good, though.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know what the... I don't know how we, you know, move forward past things like Keith Gross, like how you avoid a self-funded candidate.
Well, he must have told a good story. I mean, you were here at the fundraiser, and you were pretty assured at that time, weren't you, that like all the problems were pretty much going to blow over?
I'll say this. He was not a great speaker. I think he seemed very nervous because he kept repeating whatever he was saying. But I think a lot of people gave money not because they thought Keith Gross was going to be the savior of, you know, I didn't give money because I thought I gave money because I really disliked Mike Jacobs. And I think that's why a lot of people gave money, and that's why he got so much support, because it was like, here's a guy that can raise a lot of money against this guy none of us like. And I don't think it was so much a pro-Keith Gross movement as much as it was an anti-Mike Jacobs, and everybody thought, well, if you can clear the field and have this one guy focus on it, it'll be easier. Unfortunately, you know, everybody just backed the wrong guy.
I guess, you know, all the money that people seemingly donated to him, it just shows, in all the anger against Mike Jacobs, shows that there could have been, you know, a candidate who didn't have the funds to
absolutely
fund himself.
Well, that's the thing that I can't believe, that they couldn't find, you know, we all, Mike Jacobs switched, what, at the very end of the session?
It was at the very, yeah, I mean, there was at least a year and a half to find someone.
Yeah, we should have been able to find somebody. And it's another example of how our bench in Georgia, in the Georgia Democratic Party, is very weak. There should have been someone coming up from either the Young Democrats or the County Party or some,
Red Clay.
Red Clay, some nonprofit who could... Or from anywhere.
And once again, we get back to, why is Sham ready? Why is
Scott Holcomb,
Rand Knight? I don't know where these guys live, but those are the guys that need to be running for these seats against Mike Jacobs, not for Secretary of State or U.S. Senate. But they want to shoot for the stars, and then they flame out, and you never hear from them again. I don't understand it.
I understand.
Sham Reddy has at least gone to... I've seen him at other political events. I think that he'll probably eventually do something else.
I hope you're right, but I just don't get this. Why not start from city council, state senate, and then run for U.S. Senate? Mm-hmm. These guys just try to do it all at once. And I like the guy, but I include Scott Holcomb as well. I mean, it's the same thing. Run for something lower, if you're listening.
Yeah, well, because you need to build a block of support. You need a group of people who are gonna be able to support you and give you money and help you get out the vote. And
because right. Clearly, I mean, even the AFL-CIO can't get more than 5% of the vote out there, even if you're able to get their endorsement. So, you know, you really need to build from a grassroots level.
Well, you know, there's another election coming up in just a few months, and it's actually the general election, and it's a big one because it's also the presidential election. And while I'm not 100% sold on it myself, I keep hearing that certain parties are claiming that Georgia's in play, and it's an exciting thought. We were talking earlier before the broadcast about just the fact that so many new people have registered, and you know, the kind of impact this might have on the polls during the actual election day. And you know, it's exciting, and the fact that we've got Bob Barr, who's a Georgian, who's running in the Libertarian Party, which doesn't usually do horrible in Georgia, I mean, for a small third party. And then
Cynthia
McKinney, running under the Green Party. I mean, they're not going to be on the ballot, but people can write her in. And maybe there's a chance that Obama could win. But what do you guys think about that?
I don't think he'll win. I mean, I'd like to think he would, but I don't think he will win Georgia. But it is interesting that McCain is going to have to spend time here defending
and money
defending what's should be, you know, a 60% win. And it also helps, I think, Jim Martin. Again, I don't think he's going to win, but I think it helps him that the presidential, because they need, Barack Obama needs a strong Jim Martin candidacy in order to make it close. And so it's in both of their best interest for Jim Martin to be a strong candidate.
What did Jim Martin get for when he ran for lieutenant governor?
43.
So you think he can break the 43% mark?
I think so.
I think so. You know, I don't write off Senator Obama winning in Georgia. There is a lot of activity. There are a lot. They have like 175 staff in Georgia now from the Obama campaign.
I'm not sure that translates into votes, but I think it shows their seriousness about competing.
Exactly. I think they're serious about competing. I think they're making a big effort to get, there's allegedly like 500,000 unregistered voters in Georgia who they think are going to vote Democratic. And they're trying to get those people registered. Now, I don't know what kind of post-registration activities they have planned and how,
make sure they have IDs
and how well they're going to actually get out the vote. But you know, you got to give them credit. You know, even if, you know, 2% of those people vote, it's good. The one thing I will say, something that was made loud and clear to me at our Fulton County Democrats meeting on Thursday, is that there is a lot of concern in the metro counties about Election Day and the polls being very, very crowded and long, long waits. So I think there's going to be a real push, not just from the parties, but I'm hoping it'll come from the county government as well, to encourage people to vote by mail, because you don't have to have a reason to get a absentee ballot, and to vote early in the, you know.
You don't need to have a reason for an absentee ballot?
No. To have
they changed that a couple years ago.
Yeah, for advance voting, because
it was part of the compromise with the ID, actually. Yeah.
Well, I'll do that, because I'd rather
Yeah,
vote
in your PJs, right? Yeah. But I think that one of the things we should, those of us who are sort of inside baseball and interested in politics, is, like, vote and get out of the way so all the new people, when they come to the polls, they aren't going to have to wait in those long lines. Because I do think it is a... it will affect ultimate turnout. If they get to the poll, I mean, if you drag your kid to the poll with you, thinking you're going to wait 20 minutes, and there's a 3-hour line, and you've got to go to work, or you've got to make dinner, or whatever.
Yeah, it's hard for working people on a Tuesday to take off and do that.
Yeah,
too,
so I think...
I think it's a great point, because, I mean, I know for myself, it's sort of a tradition to wake up and go down to the church and vote, and you know, it's sort of a tradition that you do that. So I'd never vote absentee, but I think in this case it might be a good idea to do so.
Well, I know that in Fulton, what we're the Fulton County Party is talking about trying to organize some like some advanced voting day events, so that, you know, go vote and then come join us at, you know, wherever, someplace in the area, so that because we all are used to doing that on Election Day. But try to sort of draw some attention to the advance voting so that people will be encouraged to do that. Because, I mean, they're very concerned about it. It's not just...
Oh, I remember 4 years ago, it was huge. The turnout was huge.
Oh, yeah. I waited for an hour and a half.
And I think this year, hopefully, it'll be, you know, huger.
Do you think all of the new voters will have a lasting impact on Georgia politics? Or do you think after this election they maybe disappear?
I think that really obviously depends on the outcome, and if Senator Obama does prevail, what his message is to his supporters, because I think that makes a big difference. If he prevails and then says to his supporters, okay, you know, you elected me, but now I still need your help, because we should have learned from the Clinton administration and then now from the Bush administration that we can't just sit back and vote every 4 years. We have to be more engaged, even if it's just, you know, a half an hour a month or, you know, an hour a month or something, just to be a little bit more engaged.
I'm just always leery of relying on these people that have never voted before.
Oh, me too. And, I call them victims of voter registration drives because half the time they don't vote.
I remember in Decatur, we had a city commission race a couple of years ago, and the guy who was running as the challenger, his main thing was, we're focusing on new voters. There's only like 25% of the people vote. We're going to push that up to 50%. And we're going to get all these new voters, and we're going to get the, you know, vast majority of these new voters. Well, guess what? The same 25% of the people that voted, voted. So every time somebody says, what's going to push us over the top are these new voters, I'm always very, very leery of that, including Senator Obama.
Oh, yeah. No, and the thing that I'm concerned about is that I think they're focusing on the new voters at the expense of the more devoted Democrats.
Yeah.
You know, they're sort of ignoring some of the more organized party function, the way the parties function, which, you know, I'm not going to criticize them because, I think it's all good. It's just that I don't know that it's going to be, you know, the kind of turnout that they're counting on.
I guess we'll see in a few minutes, right?
If we could go back to the Bob Barr, whether Obama's going to win Georgia. I think that there are a lot of disaffected Republicans now who are saying, you know, I'm going to vote for Barr, Obama and McCain are the same, or whatever. But I think when they're going to be in the voting booth, I don't think they're going to pull that lever for Barr because I think they're afraid it's going to be like Nader.
Yeah.
I agree. And I think one thing that will make a difference, I don't usually think that the vice presidential choices make it much of a difference, but I think that's going to be a little bit different this year. I think it will have an impact.
I guess that'll happen within the next couple of weeks, month.
Larry's making a face.
Well, before the convention, yeah. So we'll know pretty soon.
Again, I go back to the old standbys, and traditionally, vice presidential choices never make. I would say Al Gore and Bill Clinton made a good team as a campaign team, and I thought that was the right choice that probably helped Bill Clinton. Would he have won anyway? I don't know. But I just don't see the vice presidential choice making that big of a difference.
Well, I don't usually think it does.
Yeah.
Though I do think it hurt Gore in 2000.
That was a bad pick.
That was a really bad pick.
Absolutely. Because they didn't click. And well, I don't think Kerry Edwards clicked.
We can talk about Kerry Edwards.
We can talk about Edwards.
For a year.
He might have been clicking with somebody else.
But I think it might make a difference this year. I think that I think it's interesting because, you know, we have a very young candidate and a very old candidate. And, you know, at first glance, you might think that McCain would go for someone very young and Senator Obama would go for someone a little bit older. But I think if they do that, then they're just going to show up the differences between them. So I think we're going to end up with a white guy,
in his
55-year-old white guy.
I think so. I think Clinton Gore was the best vice presidential team I've seen since I've been alive and voting. And I think that Obama needs to pick somebody who complements him and sort of is a generational sort of. We're a new generation of voters. We represent change. If he picks Sam Nunn, I don't think that works.
No, I don't think that works either.
I don't think it works if he picks Hillary Clinton. I think it has to be somebody.
I think
like
Hillary
him.
Clinton could work, but I don't think it's going to be Hillary Clinton.
Well, to bring it back to Georgia a little bit, there's recently been, and this is kind of stepping away from the electoral politics a little bit, but recently in the blogosphere, in the Georgia political blogosphere, there is a. One site, Peach Pundit, which kind of has evolved to be the place where all of this speculation and drama about Georgia politics and about, you know, people who write about Georgia politics is kind of spun off. And recently there have been two pretty high profile, you know, quote unquote liberal bloggers who wrote for that site who have been kicked off. One was Andre. What's his last name?
Walker.
Andre Walker, who also has another site. And it turned out he was accepting payola from politicians to write positive things about them on Peach Pundit. And the other one was Spacey Gracie, who has appeared on this show before. And she actually was kicked off, I guess, for ostensibly not writing enough about Georgia politics.
Right. That's
well, yeah. I think that's true, Joseph. I think in Spacey's case, I think it was more her reaction to someone saying, let's try to stay on subject, that really got her kicked off. I think if she had ignored Eric's suggestion and continued to write, she'd still be on there today. But I think it was her reaction to him saying, hey, keep it on focus.
What was her reaction?
Well,
do we know for sure that was her reaction?
I have the email.
Okay.
Yeah. She basically said, in response, Eric sent her an email, said, hey, keep it on focus. Our focus here is Georgia politics.
Okay.
And her response was about a 3-paragraph thing, part of which said, if you try to censor my post, I'm going to quit. It's going to be a big production, and I'm going to make a big scene of it. And Eric took that as a threat and said, if that's the way she's going to be, I'm kicking her off. Let's see what she does. And that's what happened. And in the process, she accused Eric of being a bad father and all this sort of other stuff. And cumulatively, she looked bad as a result of it. I'll have to say that. But ultimately, she was kicked off because of her reaction. I think if she had continued to post, they let you post anything over there, and it gets posted.
Do you think like some of the problems that people had with her had to do with? I've read some places that some of the reaction that people had, that people had to Grayson was maybe a little bit more aggressive towards her because she was a woman. Maybe a little bit more negative towards her because she was a woman. And she was, like, when I look at the people who post there, I think she was the only woman
I've
seen.
She was the only woman, and I definitely think that she was treated much differently than the men.
I mean, the tenor of her posts were different, but I think that the reaction to her was
I agree, and I think there was... I do really take objection to some of the things she posted that day in that whole thread. I thought it was a little bit childish, and I was disappointed because I do know her. But ultimately, if you look back, I don't read Peach Pundit all the time, but when you look at the way people treated her and the like viciousness that came out about and so many times it quickly devolved to things about the fact that she was a woman. It was very, it was just vicious a lot of the times. I wish that she had reacted in a different way. I think it would have made her look a little bit better ultimately. But I don't blame her. I understand why she reacted that way because she had put up with that crap for a long time.
Yeah.
I just don't understand if that's, I agree with you. She got treated like that. First of all, I think Spacey's very talented and, you know, like she has a different style, clearly. I think sometimes she posted stuff that was not really on topic. I will agree with that.
Everybody does. You're looking for traffic. Everybody's looking for traffic. And I'm sure Eric got a lot of traffic on some of those posts because they were a little bit provocative. And I think he probably liked that.
But my question is, if she was getting treated like that, why didn't she quit on her own?
Well, why didn't Eric do something about it? Why didn't he, ask some of those commenters, who are regular commenters, why didn't he sort of try to pull the reins on some of them? I mean...
It's tough to keep
it right. It is tough.
Why does she have to quit? Why does she have to be like, I'm tired of this bullshit, I'm going to quit? She probably was like, fuck this, I'm going to keep on going. And was like, I don't care if people call me a lesbian. I don't care,
I think that was her reaction.
I don't care that anybody's going to call me a man and make fun that I need to get laid or whatever those comments were about. They were all about her gender, and she was probably like, screw you, I'm going to keep going. I don't really care what they say about me. Like, I don't blame her for saying, oh, I can't handle this anymore, I'm going to quit.
I agree. I'm not saying that's what she should
have done. She's kind of in a no-win situation there.
Yeah,
But it's one of those things, like, since this is a site that affects a lot of the inside baseball people who talk about Georgia politics all the time or read about them. I mean, everybody's seen this, so it's just kind of interesting this happened, that there's no female voice on Peach Pundit anymore.
Andre, on the other hand.
Yeah.
I was waiting for him to say that.
Deserved what came to him, and
was that a big surprise though? Because no. Nothing that came out really seemed like.
I think everybody knew he was on the payroll for Vernon Jones. Yeah, I mean, exactly. That blog looked just like his, the Vernon Jones for Georgia. That blog's not.
And you got to wonder now, looking back on things, who else has he been paid by? Deborah Honeycutt? No, he was against her. Donzella James. He did some pro Donzella James.
He worked for Donzella. For,
yeah, Vernon. David Scott, you've now got to wonder about that whole South Fulton thing. Who was paying him for that? Although it was very ill-fated.
Well, I wasn't surprised by it. I was. I mean,
you hate even talking about him, don't you, Catherine? You can't even get it out of your mouth. Like, you don't want to spend time talking about.
I really don't want to. But. I do think it was bad for the Georgia blogs, though, because I think that a lot of the conversations that came up afterwards, this is always what happens.
Well, I thought it was interesting though, on the Creative Loafing, Ken Edelstein I think said something about how, this just shows you when people are anonymous and you don't know who they are, like this is what happens. Everybody knew who he was.
They love that anonymity thing. It's like a dog to a bone whenever anything comes up. Oh, it's all because we're all anonymous.
The funny thing is
we're not.
None of us are.
In the Atlanta, what is that rag's name that came out with the story?
Journal Constitution?
No.
Atlanta Progressive News.
Progressive News.
Oh, yeah. God.
Matthew.
In the original story, they quoted me extensively, but no one ever emailed me or tried to find out my phone number or called me. I mean, I may go by the monkey or Decatur guy, but I think everybody knows who I am. If you don't, my name's Larry Costin. I live in Decatur. No one ever tried to contact me, and they did this whole Decatur side against this and this and this. Decatur guy could not be reached for comment.
Oh, I thought that was really interesting.
You're actually in a comment.
So, the whole thing is just weird. I don't think it reacts negatively on George's policy.
You don't? Well, that's
I think it reacts negatively on Andre Walker. And he's a special breed, special species, and I think it reacts.
And he was not at all like he was not apologetic. He did not, ultimately he gave that really lame ass, I guess I should have told somebody he's going to be at the convention though.
Oh, hooray.
Blogging from the convention.
Hooray.
I'm surprised that hasn't been repealed from him.
Oh, they won't. They don't care. It's the DNC.
But he had the most hits on election day of any other Georgia blog, except the ones that don't publish their numbers.
Really?
That's what he said.
I don't believe it.
Georgia's leading blogger.
Yeah.
And failed political candidate.
Well, it's such a beautiful sight.
Did he run for something?
Mm-hmm. He's run for a couple things.
Within the Georgia party, he has.
Oh, yeah.
No, he ran for office.
No, I don't know if he's run for public office, but he did spearhead that South Fulton thing.
It was 4 years ago. 85% of that. I heard his stump speech at a YDG convention. It was
like some
2002, 2003. It was some house race. I'd have to look it up. But
I know everyone was saying that they thought it would be the end of his blogging career. He's ruined for life, but I don't see it really affecting him at all.
He's not ruined. He's just Andre. I mean, he is who he is, and
you'll have fodder for years to come.
Yeah.
Well, he won't. I don't think he will. I don't think he'll get a gig on a group blog again. But he'll just continue blogging on his own.
What really? I mean, it's bad that Andre's doing what he's with getting paid by candidates to write positively about. But what it says more is the candidates that are actually paying him.
Well, that's true.
I mean, why? I mean, if you've got limited funds and, you can do a mailer or you can pay Andre $500 a month, it just makes no sense.
Listen, you can pay me.
Exactly.
My address is on Blogford.
Well, and on that note, we probably should end things. Thank you for listening. I'm going to start with Catherine to do final thoughts. Thanks to Manuel's Tavern. Thanks to Rusty and Amber for providing the equipment and the hosting space. And thank you for listening again. Catherine, final thoughts?
Vote early. You can request an absentee ballot 45 days before the election. Do it or advance vote, because we don't want you to have to wait in line for 3 hours.
I don't have really anything to say. I'm just the people who want Mike Jacobs out of office, start finding a candidate now for 2010, because you know it really takes that amount of time to get somebody, and make sure that they're a Georgia resident.
It may be a little older than 24.
And older than 24. And Michelle Conlon, you should be ashamed of yourself for getting tossed out of that race by that 24-year-old. It's shameful.
Her pages were not. She got invalidated, I think. Some of her signatures did. That's why she didn't make it.
I'm talking about why she got pushed out of the race by him in the first place. Yeah. Your turn.
Make sure to support Chris Huttman against Jill Chambers.
I agree with that.
All right. Thank you everyone for listening. This is Georgia Politics Podcast. Listen to us next time.